Mountain Dew FM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
Thanks to Jenny Green for her entertainment this afternoon. It's Tuesday, the 9th of February, and this is Game On.
Coming up today, in the strangest hurling off-season, we catch up with All-Ireland winner Limerick's Cian Lynch.
Words actually can't describe it here. Like, even me trying to explain it doesn't make sense, but just to know that support is there and it just shows the community spirit and just togetherness is huge in a time where we can't physically be together, just spiritually knowing that people are standing shoulder to shoulder, you know?
In our latest stop on Ruby's Road to Cheltenham, trainer Dan Skelton tells us about his winning approach.
We're going to win. We're going to win. We're going to win lots. And we're going to win some that we shouldn't win. You know, that's the mark of being really good, I think, is winning when you shouldn't or when you can't or whatever.
I like that confidence. Plus, we'll hear from the Irish rugby camp and we're live to Old Trafford. We've Mark Langdon on European football and we've another Fitbit and other goodies to give away thanks to Green Farm.
Game on 2FM.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at Game On 2FM. So there's two games in the FA Cup fifth round tonight. Burnley are playing Bournemouth at Turf Moor Park. That kicked off at 5:30. And Bournemouth, the championship side, are one up. They scored in the 21st minute when Sam Sturridge had a tap-in. And reading the online comments of the commentary I'm following on the BBC website, it would appear that Bournemouth looked more like the Premiership side than Burnley, who've made 8 changes since they drew with Brighton last weekend. Manchester United. I'm telling you, Manchester United do play West Ham at 7:30 this evening, and that one is live on BBC One Television. If you need entertainment when you're finished listening to us, Donica, Simon Zeebo. He's throwing comments out there. Is he fishing for a little line? His contract with Racing isn't certain. Is he flying a kite for a new one in Munster?
Absolutely, Ruby. His comments at the moment, he was saying that, you know, he's interested in staying with Racing. For them to win a European a title would be incredible. For him to be a part of that would be great. But he'd also like to get home. And I think as a Munster fan, you'd love to hear that and be around to have someone of his quality back and around the game would be incredible.
It gets a bit complicated though there, because I would imagine at this stage in his career it would have to be a Munster contract. It's not going to be a central contract, is it?
I would think so, but the thing is, Simon Zeebo is a finisher. He's a kind of match winner and he would probably be valued within the market. And as we're seeing with all the sports at the moment, COVID is such a factor. Would clubs or even international bodies be able to pay the type of money that, you know, good players like Simon Zeebo deserve? So it's a difficult time. I actually feel for the lads that are out of contract at the moment. It is very, very tough.
I imagine as well, you know, you mentioned that it's been such a strange time that things that come into focus very much so are stability and family and home and things like that as well, when everything is so up in the air.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, he's a Munster man. He's a Cork man. He loves being around it. His family. I think the experience would be great for him. To get him back to Munster would be amazing. It really would be. He's just
fans' favourite. Except there's no fans.
But not even a fan's favourite. There's times, Marie, where you just need a match winner. And what I've noticed about Zeebo is the bigger the stage, and we've seen it with Racing, especially in that semi-final, when he's with the great and people really throw it down, he can find another gear. So I think when, you know, when X factor is needed, which it is in rugby, to have someone, you know, a Cork boy, a Blackrock boy that absolutely loves it, I think would be important to have around it. But look, it'll have to play out and it would be brilliant to see though. But there was news from the Irish camp today. Peter O'Mahony, we're still waiting on the verdict of his appeal, but Johnny Sexton and James Ryan are following their return to play protocol. Jack Conan's been called into the squad and he might be a little bit far away, but Rob Kearney actually played 20 minutes today for the Western Force against ACT, so plenty Irish in action.
I was reading the reports on Johnny Sexton and James Ryan, and the way they're describing them, what happened after or why they were replaced, was head knocks. And you know, we spoke a little bit about it with Rog yesterday, and it does seem, or it did feel anyway, over the weekend watching that Ireland game, that there was a bit more than normal. What did you think, Duncan?
In the whole Six Nations, Marie, it's looking like gladiator stuff. Like even Dan Lydiate's injury, you know what I mean, an ACL, before you saw them maybe once a season. So it is, you know, you worry about the safety of the players. And Marie, this is the thing about contracts as well. These players deserve to be paid well. You know, I always viewed contracts, and it was a good bit of advice, that it's compensation for what your body is going to have to go through in time. And, you know, I think everyone would look at players and say, you're liking that, Ruby.
I am and I amn't. I can fully understand what you're saying, but I don't think anybody made me be a jockey or made anybody be a rugby player either. So that is a choice that we all made as professional sports people, fully aware of most of the risks we were taking. I'm not going to say all of the risks with what's coming out, concussions in other sports, but I don't fully agree with the compensation part. We got paid to do what we were doing, and we were professionals who probably never viewed what we were doing as work either. So we had that privilege too, Dunica, that a lot of people didn't have.
100% a privilege. But my point is, they deserve to be well paid. When you look at Ian Dowling, Dennis Leamy, both had hip operations already, and they're quite young, you know. So I think you look at guys' futures, and you know, I do think contracts are important. It is difficult at the moment, but I do think the lads do deserve to be well paid, and you know, when they're putting their bodies through so much. So look, they're on the return to play protocol, Johnny Sexton and James Ryan, and the good thing, honestly, Marie, they won't be put out if they're not right. So I suppose that is some reassurance.
As a retired player now with a good understanding of the rules, if you were sitting on that board today listening to Peter O'Mahony and his appeal, would you be going with the two-match ban? Would you think, looking at it, that he did hit him in the face, he had to be sent off, there was no intent? Would you be lenient? What way, if you were sitting on that appeals panel today, would you see it?
So the way they set up that board, because
hang on now, I'm asking you what you'd do.
I think what rugby needs at the moment is for that to be an example. And unfortunately for Pete, I think the punishment probably needs to be as harsh as the 2 weeks or the 3 weeks. It's the only way we're going to change behaviours. It's the only way coaches are going to teach breakdown differently. It's the only way players are going to change their behaviours. If there's, unfortunately for Pete, like, I believe me, I've hit rocks exactly like he's hit him. In fact, we were coached to do it, and I would have been one of the people leading the line for this is how we clear out our breakdown. But just contact with the face, I think, or with the head, it needs to be punishable now.
And therefore, with the suspension, would you then make that a two-match international ban so you could go back playing for Munster rather than a two-week ban?
Yeah, that's the big problem. If you look at Liam Williams, he got a two-match ban. And then I think in England, someone like Joe Myler got a 10-week ban. But COVID hit in and he didn't serve 1 week of the... So it's whether it falls on the days. What was happening, Ruby, was teams were even setting up games to probably get guys back out on the pitch as quickly as they possibly could. I think it is fairer if they just pick and stick with one. So, and I think the matches are the way to do it.
So you get Pete O'Mahony now for Ireland. He misses Ireland's next two internationals, but could go back playing for Munster.
But the sickener for Pete is, if that's the case, even the game being on a Sunday, so you lose 2 days of the weekend, whereas Munster's match could have been on a Friday. So if Ireland had played Italy on a Friday night and Pete picks up a two-game ban, he's available to play Sunday 2 weeks. So it's, you know, it's all that kind of small stuff. One thing I'd say he's quite glad of, he doesn't have to head over to Scotland. Normally the discipline and hearing meetings are in Scotland. You have to head away with your team manager. It's an awful day, it really is. It's just...
But do you not think if you got in there eye to eye, man to man, you could appeal to their better side? It'd be harder to do that on Zoom.
I'll be honest, you're chanting.
Cry, shed a tear, something.
I don't think Peter O'Mahony would cry and...
No, he's...
Or try anything behind closed doors to get off a ban.
The thing about it is, though, like on those committees, you're right, there is one rugby person, but then there's maybe two other, you know, solicitors or barristers, and it is all about law. And it's a proper... Like, what you want is your barrister, whoever's representing you, to be able to fight the shades of wording and different things like that. So, look, behaviour matters as well when it comes into it. But and also what matters is someone like Thomas Francis sending in a statement saying, you know, I felt no ill effects of, and as crazy as it sounds, that happens an awful lot. You would not believe.
So then, like, I'm just thinking about this from a jockey's point of view, what would happen in a showroom, room, like if you had won the race, not won the race, etc. So Wales beat Ireland, would that probably put a different taint on the statement he would send in, seeing as they actually won the game compared to if they'd lost it?
No, it's just, I know this is a crazy thing, but I've handed in statements myself that you're nearly biting your lip writing it down or sending it on, that you're going, I can't believe I'm saying this about this pain in the arse. But it's just the done thing that you always say. It's like a...
Not in the women's AFL. Don't you remember Breed Stack came out after the injury that she sustained and was absolutely disgusted with how the treatment of her on the pitch and the whole way that the disciplinary hearing went.
Yeah, it's amazing to hear. What we used to do, Marie, was kill them with kindness in the statements or your side, and then you'd hold it for the dressing room next time out, and you'd be there, that Thomas Francis, you know, remember what he did to Pete or whatever it was, any bit of ammo that you could use,
okay.
He did.
Well, hopefully we will have an answer on this. It is a disciplinary hearing that is ongoing at the moment, and we might get word of it before 7 o'clock. We're going to take a break now, and then we're back with Limerick's Keane Lynch.
With Green Firm. Green Firm's new on-the-go chicken bites are natural, high in protein, and packed with flavour.
Game on 2FM.
Okay, all this week we have some fantastic hampers to give away on the show with thanks to our brilliant sponsors, Green Firm. The hampers contain Green Firm's products, including their latest on-the-go chicken range. The range includes chicken bites with 3 different flavours. They're all 100% natural, high in protein, and come with a handy little skewer so you can eat them anywhere and on the go. And tonight's prize is a fantastic New Year's fitness hamper full of good stuff like Fitbits, a dumbbell water bottle, a goal-setting diary, and of course a brilliant speaker so you can listen to your music anywhere you want as you work out. Marie, how do you win this amazing Green Firm hamper?
So all you need to do is answer the following question. Which team are the current holders of the FA Cup? Text the word green followed by your answer and name to 51552 and we'll pick a winner before the end of the show. As always, RTE competition terms and conditions apply. See 2fm.ie for more. Now, speaking of Green Firm, I'm delighted to say that we have an ambassador for a Green Firm on the phone, and he's also a Limerick hurler. Keane Lynch, how are you?
Hello, Marie. How are you getting on?
So, speaking of trying to be fit for the new year and do all the right things and eat your chicken and your protein and all the rest, what have you been doing in the off-season, Keane?
I suppose I've been lucky enough. I've been able to work away with uni jobs and I suppose college on top of that. It's kind of kept me going. I suppose I'm kind of grateful that I've kind of worked with Green Firm as well, which kind of get that bit of protein and the extra bit of food, I suppose, and they're kind of going non-stop. So it's nice to have a little bit of the proper food getting into, and that's why it's kind of great to look at the snack on the go range. So absolutely delighted.
Well, you're saying all the right things anyway, Keane. But just in terms of training, like obviously we've been watching you playing hurling now for a very, very, very long time, all the way up through the underage ranks and at senior level, and we've seen you win in All-Irelands. And to be fair, I don't think you've ever looked out of shape. Do you train all year round?
You haven't seen me now over the last few weeks. I've a few pounds put up. I'm wintering well, but... No, I suppose it's important to switch off, and I suppose it's an off-season that a lot of us have never really had, you know, because I suppose me personally, you're either going into club hurling after the county set up and you're going back into maybe college hurling for some lads or back at it again preparing for the league. So I suppose it's nice, in a sense, to take a break, but I'd say most lads now are only kind of biting at the cherry again to get going, but it's hard, and I suppose... I'd say everyone's kind of feeling the pinch now more than ever. You know, January was probably the longest month for a lot of people, whether into sport or not. And so we're all waiting for that light at the end of the tunnel.
Can you say you've wintered well? Are you talking you've put on 4 kilos, 6 kilos, 8 kilos? Have you completely stopped training?
I'm afraid to step up on the weighing scale now. My weighing scale tells me lies at the best of times, so I'll be blaming it when I step up on it. But no, I've kind of let the beard grow and the hair grow and trying to let myself go for a while.
Have you completely stopped training, or would you do a couple of sessions a week anyway? Like, are you completely off, or are you just back down to what the rest of us would consider normal?
I suppose, like, me personally, I'm kind of gone fond of the old walks. It's kind of as good as my training's getting now, just literally getting up in the morning, doing a bit of work, doing a bit of college, and heading off for an old stroll. And I think that's nice as well, you know. It's an exercise in itself rather than going all guns blazing, but it is very hard. I'm finding it hard not doing anything, if that makes sense. And I suppose most people are probably the same. There's only so much Netflix you can watch, and there's only so much sitting down you can do, like, so it's hard enough to do nothing, if that makes sense.
Well, before you won the All-Ireland and you did have that little break, a lot of the players then, when you did win, credited having that little break with the success that you had, just taking that time to switch off, because I think anybody that follows the GAA knows that it can be quite intense, it can be a bubble, there can be a huge amount of focus on it. Like, generally, coaches and managers, they like their pre-season, they like to have their players, and, you know, they like that intensity that goes with the intercounty as well.
Yeah, it is huge, like, and I suppose when you go back at it, everyone is all guns blazing, everyone's mad for road, but it is hugely important to make sure when you're off, or when you have time off, to take that time. And I suppose it goes for any youngster too, growing up, looking to play a sport, just make sure you have that time to do things that you mightn't have had the chance to do. And I suppose for a lot of us now, it's perspective, and spending that bit extra time with your family. We have a little nephew there as well, so spending time with those loved ones that you might have the opportunity in the evenings to do. And I know a lot of it is within our 5 kilometre radius, but just appreciating the little things, and that's why I kind of go back to going for my little walks. Like, it's rare enough you do that when you're in full flow of a season, and I'm kind of enjoying that, and it's nice to be able to get out and do that and appreciate the old surroundings too, you know.
Yeah, a lot of us watched the Johnny Pinkleton doc on TG Carher last week, and we're just taken by, I guess, how different things were back then. And, like, I know it was a different time, even though for a lot of people it probably won't feel like it was that long ago. But just in terms of, I suppose, maybe what they gave compared to what ye gave, it does seem like, you know, you have your psychologists, and you have your different coaches and your nutritionists, and some teams have sleep coaches and all the rest. Like, is there anything more you can do you think, or is this kind of peak level of commitment for GAA players?
Yeah, I suppose it's as professional as soccer and rugby and all those professional sports, and all in name, like. And I suppose every player, whether it's playing hurling, football, or ladies, everyone is doing their utmost to just get that extra inch. And as you said, like, every setup has the top of the range selectors, coaching staff, psychologists, nutritionists, and I don't know, it's hard to see where it goes from here, you know, and that's probably the big question. But we're all just so grateful we have the opportunity to be able to be a part of these setups and to have these experts around us, because especially now in the current climate, everyone needs that bit of a perk up, whether it's from a nutritionist to tell you what you should be eating or what you shouldn't be eating, or a psychologist for the old mindset, because we all know how fragile the mind can get too, you know.
Keane, just on it, probably the margin for error now has moved away from fitness, but it's in your game, it's with skill. So how are you managing your touch at the moment? How are you harnessing your skills when you can't be around the lads?
Yeah, it's very hard. Like, I suppose we're all so interdependent on each other as players. Like, you know, you depend on the guy next to you at a training session to drive you on and to call you out when you're not pulling your weight. So it is hard to keep yourself at the top edge, but so getting out for those little walks, I tend to bring the old hurley with me, whether it's hitting the ball off the old ground, just hopping it up and down, or playing a bit of road hurling there. I might do that with one of the lads, one of the neighbours there, which is a nice bit of crack and something different, and you're trying to curl it around the corner, and there's potholes that haven't been fixed, you're blaming them for a few dodgy hops, like, so it's nice to change it up.
And Keane, just the reality, though, of the situation that we're in. Eamon McGee, the Donegal footballer, recently spoke about potentially losing a generation of hurlers and or footballers or GAA players. But when you think of maybe the things that made you the hurler that you are, the likes of, you know, Hearty Cups, underage setups, college, all the rest, and the fact that we don't know when they're coming back, if they're coming back, and all that time now that players of the kind of school going early college ages, you know, those platforms that made them want to go on and follow in the likes of your footsteps, they might not be there now. How worrying is it for that generation of players, the ones that are coming after you, Keane?
Yeah, it is. Like, I feel so sorry for them, especially the likes of the Hearty Cup, as you said. It's such a prestigious competition, and a lot of youngsters get found and
find themselves, I suppose, by playing Hearty Cup hurling, and the same the Gaelic football side of things as well. And I suppose moving on to college too, you've a lot of guys and ladies that are aiming to play kind of college level sport, which is huge. And I suppose my own example is Fitzgibbon hurling. Like, it's probably the best competition you'd play outside of intercounty, and it is hard, and I do, my heart goes out to lads that are aimed to play Fitzgibbon. But I suppose you just all have to be patient and do your own bit on the side and just try to have that extra edge, because everyone is on the same boat. But my heart does go to people that are missing out on those competitions, because they are extra special. Like,
I even see it in our own sport, horses getting older and missing 4-year-old year, 5-year-old year, kids that or young fellas that would, or girls as well, that would have been minor, that are just getting beyond minor. Could you see the GAA, I don't know, moving dates, making minor under 19, extending those things to give people that missed that last year a chance?
Yeah, it is very hard to know what the solution is, like, but I suppose something like that would probably be the best bet. I suppose let it miss minor, like extending it for next year, go back to the old way and let them play it out when things are right. And I suppose you still have the championship to finish off, like, which is huge for lads too. You know, they put everything into it and they're still the semi-finals to play. So it's just hoping that these youngsters get the chance to play and represent their clubs at county level and represent their families, because it's a massive honour, like, and not everyone gets the opportunity, but you're just hoping that they get the chance.
Yeah, and then we get some sort of a decent season anyway. Just after the All-Ireland, look, I suppose we've had a bit of an extended break now, and everyone is looking for things to talk about, and there's been a lot of focus on the things that you did. And Paul Kinnerk is somebody that a lot of people are interested in, although he keeps a very, very low profile. But just in terms of yourself, Keane, what kind of work did he do with you, and what did he focus on with you?
Like, Paul, as you know yourselves, is a proper gentleman, like, and I suppose a role model outside of everything. Is a proper man you'd look to in all walks of life. But for me personally, it's just that kind of rock, like, you know, if things aren't going well for yourself personally, or you're finding you're not getting your flow, or if things aren't going well, he's just that person you can lean on and just seek a bit of advice. And I suppose that's where he is, and he's held in this team, he's held in. So massive credit to him for what he has done and what he continues to do.
And what about your game? Was there anything that he'd like to work on in your game, or tell you that you need to improve?
That's endless. There's stuff there to work on. I'm still at home asking myself, what am I going to do about it? But no, he is brilliant. Like, and as I said, he's someone you can pick up the phone to, put a quick chat to him about anything at all. And as I said, whether it's about hurling or if it's life in general, he's one of these people that he's a psychologist within himself as well. So I just want to thank him for that.
Keane, obviously there's no GAA on the television at the moment, but I assume you have interest in other sports. Would you have been watching the rugby at the weekend and looking at how the lads dealt with being down to 14 men, or thinking about how Billy Burns is going to deal with the week ahead of him? Would you watch other sports to see if you could pick up things?
Yeah, 100% I would. I have massive interest in, I suppose, the soccer and the rugby as well. As you said, watching the match the weekend was disappointing, but I suppose his character too, as you said, down to 14 men, the way they bounced back and just kept plugging away, and I suppose it's about regrouping again, isn't it, and getting back on the horse, as they say. But it is massive to seek, I suppose, would it be advice or seek learnings from watching these professions, like, and how they go about their business, because that's what GAA players are trying to do. You know, we're trying to get to that level where we do everything right, we prepare right, we act in the right fashion and hold ourselves with high esteem, exactly like they do. So it is massive, and it is something I love watching. I suppose it's going to shorten the old next few weeks again.
Keane, we saw two of them, Liverpool and the Kansas City Chiefs. They couldn't back it up. You know, it is difficult to do it year on, year off. How are you going to manage it?
I suppose just taking it as it comes now, like, you know, and it goes back to switching off the old mind and not getting carried away now at the moment when there's no clear plan, I suppose, and not just settling for what we've done either. And I suppose that goes back to just the psychology of things, like, just you want to keep driving on, you want to keep moving forward, and no point sitting back in your laurels either, like, which is something we don't want to do. So it's just trying to push yourself as an individual and as a team, and it goes back to the interdependence. We depend on each other as a group, and I suppose every other team is the same. You look to each other for inspiration and advice, and I'm just hoping to God we get the chance to get back together soon, just to get a bit of a buzz back, you know, and have another laugh.
And Cian, just with the club, you look to a few Six Mile Bridge men to try and lead you to glory this year.
Yeah, please God. Looking at the club as well, getting back to them, I suppose there needs to be a clear plan for the club layout as well, which is huge. And so that's the things we can look forward to now as well. Like, you know, I know we kind of might be harping on about not being able to get out and do stuff, but just looking to when things open up and when we're allowed back with the club and allowed back with the county, it's just having that bit of a buzz, you know. You've new lads around, new setup, a new bit of young fellas coming through. So it is, there's a lot to look forward to, like, and just enjoy the old downtime in any way we can. And for anyone that's kind of finding it hard, you're not alone. Like, we're all feeling the pinch, and just get out and about. And something I've been trying to do is just every morning I wake up, when I put the foot in the ground, it's a great day, and just to grab that with two hands and enjoy every day we can. So stay safe.
Well, I think that's a good point to leave it on. Cian Lynch, thanks so much for joining us. Cian is Green Firm ambassador, and if anybody missed out on our competition, all you need to do is to text us to 51552 the answer to this question: which team are the current holders of the FA Cup? Text the word green followed by your answer and your name to 51552, and as always, RTE competition terms and conditions apply.
Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Fuel your day the healthy way with Green Firm on-the-go chicken bites. 100% natural and packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. I have to say, it was very refreshing there listening to Cian Lynch. Some really good advice. And just on the off the back of that, then looking at Twitter there, Tánaiste Leo Varadkar told Drive Time that he expects we will have a relatively normal summer that will be very much like last summer. And he was asked, we'll be able to sit in beer gardens, and he said he hopes so. I think that means that there could be a few people at matches.
I mean, he'd be sitting in a Phoenix Park, yeah?
Just assume. He also said that he has ordered a clippers online to cut his own hair, so it doesn't seem too good for the hairdressers, which I'm screaming out for.
It is getting along all right, but on a serious note, though, it would be nice to have a bit of a championship to be able to see the lads and ladies going out playing the games. And it's hard to see it at the moment, but we are in the middle of February and a lot can happen.
I think it'll be more important for myself and Donica that you get a championship.
Oh, yes.
Or it could be some long summer for the two of us. That's really what I'm thinking. Bournemouth are still leading Burnley 1-0 as the second half gets underway at Turf Moor, an hour before Manchester United bid to extend their run in the FA Cup.
Now, we are going to have a little quick chat about rugby, because, Donica, we didn't get to talk yesterday too much about your opinion on the Ireland performance over the weekend. The Ireland coach, Simon Easterby, was out today speaking to the media. He gave an update on the return to play players, the James Ryan and the Jonathan Sexton, and he also spoke a little bit about HIA.
Obviously, if a stage has failed, they have to drop back day, and then that obviously puts them under pressure. You know, our primary focus is their health and safety first and foremost. So if a player, which may well be the case at some stage this week, if a player feels like they can't complete the stage they're in, then they obviously have to drop back a stage, and that compromises their availability. But you know, we're aware of that, and we have. We obviously we have plans in place to potentially have to deal with that if they come along, you know. But at the moment, that's what we're planning for, is that they get through each stage each day, and they get that one step further to making themselves available by the weekend.
So, Donica, if Jonathan Sexton is not available, who would you go for in the number 10?
I think I'd agree with Rog. If you're starting someone, it's Ross Byrne. I do think Billy Burns is probably a better impact off the bench, but I think they've got it right in their setup. I also think they were right not to bring anyone in. I know we always think Irish camp is an opportunity, but with two out halves there, just giving them game reps is the most important thing. But it's interesting, Marie, just the amount of tired bodies. I'd say there's around Carton House at the moment. Good news today, Jack Conan coming in. He was brilliant for Leinster against Scarlets, and it'll be interesting to see, will he come straight into the fold, because now there is a weakness in the balance of our back row. So it'll be interesting. Guys could come straight in from out of the cold and straight back in, but there's going to be an awful lot of sore bodies. You look at someone like Tadhg Byrne, I think he led the tattle count, carry count and rucks both for and against, which is just incredible.
And just we were chatting earlier about Peter O'Mahony, and the news is in, he has got a 3-game ban. So the Ireland back row, Peter O'Mahony, appeared before the disciplinary committee today and he admitted the act of dangerous play and he has been given a 3-game ban. So we will follow up on that a little bit later on.
Some big, big calls for Andy Farrell and his team to make this week then, but continuing on our Tuesday night team here as we theme as we build towards the Cheltenham Festival. We're delighted to be joined on the line by British trainer Dan Skelton. Dan, how are you?
Grand, Ruby. Thanks for having us.
No, you're very welcome. And for our viewers or listeners, even, I was going to say viewers, I think I thought it was on television there for a minute. For our listeners, Dan, you didn't come from a horse racing background. You came from a show jumping background. Your dad obviously is a double gold medal winning Olympian. How did you decide horses, race horses over show jumpers?
A lack of talent show jumping, if I'm totally honest with you.
As simple as that.
Easy. Stick to easy what you're half good at the start and get better at it, hopefully.
Not so bad. But look, I know you a long time since you were in Paul Nicholls. You were assistant there when I was stable jockey. But you've made an unbelievable start to your training career.
Yeah, we have. And like, when you get support, you've got to make it count. And we were very lucky at the start. We got plenty of support. We had a new facility that people were interested in. And obviously, I'd had a lot of good education at Paul's. And I think people just joined in and thought, well, maybe this is a new, a sort of a new venture, and we'd like to be in at the start, and we capitalised on that. And sort of the last 3 years has really been a trying to raise the quality of the yard, which sounds obvious, but you need a different type of horse to win a good race, to just win any race. And we had a lot of horses that could win races, but you have to plan and sort of work out what you're doing with the better ones to get them to the top. And you know, I always thought that it was very simple. You just got a horse, you got it fit, you run it in the right race, just like Paul did. But it became very apparent to me when I started doing it myself, there's a big gulf in quality. So when you start out, the horses that you get that, you know, you win a 0 to 130, you think you're doing quite well. Whereas probably the 0 to 130 horses we had in Nicholls' yard, you could count on one hand. So, you know, that rating band is a sign of quality, and you know, trying to get up well into the higher ranks is what it's all about now.
What way would you say you've changed the most since the days that you were working with Ruby?
I suppose just when you're your own boss, when you are the boss, you've got to be very decisive. And when you're working as a part of a team and you're an under manager, the buck always stopped with Paul. And there's a little bit of a safety net involved in that. You can have an opinion, but you know you're not really going to be judged by it, because at the end of the day, it might be your idea, but it's not your head on the block if it goes wrong. You get judged as a manager in any sport by your results on a day-to-day, week-to-week, year-to-year basis. So having the conviction to make a decision, stick by it, and also be brave enough to admit you got it wrong at times and, right, we'll learn from that and we'll do something different next time. That's the big difference in sort of almost being a kid to being a man and growing up, to be a trainer.
You brought your brother Harry with you from Paul Nicholls as well, and he's now your stable jockey. He's been a huge part of your success.
Very much, but yeah, it's an honesty policy there that, you know, it goes beyond just jockey-trainer relation. He can say anything to me, whether he really thinks it's going to offend me or not, he can still say it because it doesn't offend me. I might disagree with him or I might consider he's not seeing it the way a trainer would. But at the end of the day, you need the honest opinion of your riders, because if you're getting told something you want to hear, it's going to make a big difference to your next step. And I think one of the big things in any sport, and obviously it's in our sport, I can quantify it, one of the big things is not doing the wrong things. So if he says to me, do not run that horse at Fakenham, it's too tight, we will not run that horse at Fakenham. Whereas if you didn't have the trust of your jockey, or the jockey didn't want to upset the trainer, he may just let that horse run round Fakenham, good in the knowledge it'll get beat because it won't get round the bends. And the horse has had a bad experience. It's not won. The owners are upset and you're on the back foot. So not making obvious mistakes sounds an obvious thing to do, but sometimes, you know, a jockey and a trainer see things differently and you need a little bit of direction off both. So that's worked very, very well. He knows them all so well at home as well. He schools them all. He sees them all. He understands that, you know, he would be asking our head lad every day how they're eating. He'd know everything about every horse. So it's a massive advantage.
And just in terms of the pandemic, like we're almost in a rhythm of it now at this stage, but how has it affected you and what you do?
Well, I suppose on from a personal basis, it's actually allowed us to, or allowed me anyway, to stop and almost take stock of what's going on. And that's what I did back in the spring when I sort of said, right, we're going down a full quality driven route now. And we could almost reassess where we were and consolidate and made sure we went along the right trajectory. But from a business perspective, it's had a massive effect, I'm sure, like a lot of sports and other businesses. But first and foremost, the prize money being down is a real contentious point because it hasn't got any cheaper to train these horses. The owners are still getting the same bills. So actually not being able to have crowds there is not only disappointing from a sporting perspective, you know, you literally do not get cheered if you win. You know, there's no one to celebrate with, there's no one to commiserate with. You know, it can feel quite empty on the track from an emotional perspective. But from a business perspective, it's been very, very difficult. And I'm sure it'll bounce back and perhaps this is almost a reset. And, you know, some things, some positives might come out of it in that the way the sport is run and funded has to be changed and addressed. And we're going to need to be proactive, I think, not just in my own personal business, but in the racing business to promote the sport in a slightly different way and sort of encourage people to participate in it in a slightly different way. And I don't know what it's been like in Ireland, but in England, I get a lot of people, a lot of friends say to me how much they enjoy watching the coverage because it's live sport and it's something to do. And I think we've got to capitalise off the back of actually being an active sport during a pandemic that I think we've probably gained followers because of it. We mustn't lose those followers when we come out of it.
You'll be hoping the action continues this weekend. Your big arc, I'll hope all mankind is due to go to Warwick. Obviously, we'd Enner Grameen in Leopardstown last weekend. We'd Shishkin the previous weekend in Doncaster. All Mankind is a slightly forgotten one. How is he?
He's grand. Really, really happy with him. Like, he's a bit of a loony, really. He flies about the place at home. He acts at home like he does on the track a little. But actually, he only does that when he's on the gallops. If he's walking around the place or warming up, he's very quiet. It's only when he gets into top gear that he really starts flying around. But I've been very happy with him. We've always been coming to this race. We're under no illusions how hard it's going to be. And, you know, Shishkin was always, in my opinion, going to make it to the Arkle undefeated. He was always going to be a shorter price than us. He was always going to be a more likely winner than us because he won the Supreme last year. And then you can only be really impressed with an Ergamin. So, you know, we're just looking forward to this Saturday. Hopefully it's on. And then once we get our prep race out of the way, we'll go and have that match at Cheltenham. But it's going to be hard. Like you said, he's a bit the forgotten horse. But realistically, I think there's only really three potential winners of that race. And you've mentioned them all. So yeah, to just have a bit of a chance going there would be good.
It would be marvellous for you. And what about Noob Negra? He's the slightly forgotten horse in the champion chase as well. I mean, Altior be out this weekend. Shakampur Swa was out last weekend. Noob Negra was brilliant in Kempton at Christmas.
He was. The only thing is with Noob Negra is maybe that track is really perfect for him. Now, I don't think there's any negative at Cheltenham. He ran there as a juvenile a couple of times and ran really well. Possibly in races that he couldn't win at the time, if you look back through them. But we've given him time, we've looked after him. He's a big, strong horse now. He travels very well, he jumps very well. He's very economic through his race. He'll have a full tank of fuel with a good round of jumping. He'll have a full tank of fuel coming down the hill, hopefully. And then it's just a question of if he's good enough or not. I believe he will maintain the form of the horses he beat at Kempton. I think they have too big a gap to make up on him. And I thought he was very authoritative that day. And Cheltenham's a different track. You can get a, you've only got to make a mistake like Azertiup did with you that year in the Champion Chase, and you can't win, no matter what horse you're on. So the Champion Chase is, run at such a speed that you need a horse like Nuba Negra that can jump and travel. And I hope that we get there in one piece and he has a live chance. But I'm, you've got to believe in your own horses, but I really believe in this one. I think he's got, he's as good in the talent as I've ever had at my yard.
Ruby, you're nodding along there.
I am. I think any horse on any given day, I mean, that was, Dan was talking about Azertiup dropping his hind legs in the water, jump behind Moscow Flyer and Wild Chief, and that was race over. You're talking about 4 inches. He's 4 inches over the lip of the water jump, he's fine, 4 inches the wrong way, and it's race over. So you can never be afraid of one horse either. And Dan, that kind of brings me back to Roxana. I mean, we had Honeysuckle at the weekend winning the Irish Champion Hurdle. She looks like going to the Champion Hurdle in Cheltenham. You've Roxana in the Mayor's Hurdle and the World Hurdle, and why she might be better at 3 miles, are you tempted to come back to what looks like a weaker contest in the Mayor's race?
100%. I think the big factor in that will be the ground. I think if come declarations time on Sunday, if it is soft, heavy in places, I think the Mayor's Hurdle comes fully into play. If it's good to soft and looking like a dry forecast, I know that sounds ridiculous at the moment, but we all know how fast Cheltenham can dry. They get a dry week the week before and it can dry out rapidly. I think the ground has a massive bearing in it. I've got a lot of respect, obviously, for Benny, because we've met her twice, and let's be realistic, we were beat once and we were probably going to beat when she fell. And but other than her, I mean, Concertista is obviously the riser, but I still feel like she's got to prove it to be as good as a Benny De Dieu in Ireland. So it does leave it very, very open. I'd say the biggest decider would be the ground.
And Dan, your previous Cheltenham successes have all come in handicaps. You're quite good at plotting one. I know Sanctuary and the Duke Fred Winter many years ago when you were working in Paul's probably paid for some of the establishment you're now in. You were so sweet them at the time. But what have you got one plotted out for our listeners?
Well, I suppose the horse that would be obvious is Cadzand, and he's in the County Hurdle. But if he ran at the weekend, it may blow his mark. He's in the Betfair. So my intention is to run him in the Betfair. And that would be the only one. It may just blow his mark running him in that. But he looks very, very progressive. And there's a couple of other novices there that could end up in the handicaps that I think are still well handicapped. I think everything went wrong for a horse called Third Time Lucky the other day up at Musselburgh. And I know you shouldn't. It's not a great thing to be getting beaten in your prep race, but nothing went right for him that day. And I think he could be half a player. And Spirit of the Games, I think he's going to come into the plate. I know it's for a third year running, but he's so consistent at that track. You need a horse that knows how to almost get dirty in those staying in handicap chases. And I think he will be another player in the plate.
Well, I wish you all the best. Thanks so many for taking our call. I'm just going to remind my two co-hosts to write down Cadzand, Cadzand. They are hopeless tip or punters, Dan, but they were forewarned. Will they be foretold? Thanks a million.
Range available in selected Tesco, Super Value, and convenience stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. So after our very deep and meaningful conversation at the top of the show about Peter O'Mahony and what he could potentially get, we do have the definitive answer. He will miss 3 games and be available for a selection again from March 15th. And it's 3 meaningful games, Ruby.
You should have put Dunnock on that panel. He called it, fairness, an hour ago or 45 minutes ago. That's what you would have given him. You should get a job on that panel, Dunnock.
Well, an ex-player is always handy to have on it. But yeah, three weeks. So he, at the entry point there, he could have got six. So for conduct in rugby and how he conducts himself, they would have taken some time off in it. And also how he even conducted himself in the hearing. Actually putting your hand up and saying, I got that wrong. So it all matters when it comes to it. So out for 3 weeks. Look, I'll be honest, I'm disappointed for Peter O'Mahony because I know how much it'll hurt him, but I think this is good for rugby and we need to keep going now. And we, you know what I mean? We really have to. This has to help change behaviours.
Okay, well, hopefully it will. Now, a place in the FA Cup quarterfinals will be on the line when Manchester United welcome West Ham at 7:30. Darren Stanich has this report for us.
Manchester United will look to bounce back from their disappointing draw with Everton to progress to the quarterfinals of the FA Cup as David Moyes, who had 9 months in the Old Trafford hot seat, brings his high-flying West Ham team to the theatre of dreams. It's too easy to judge Moyes on that disastrous stint as United boss. The Hammers have been impressive this season. They currently sit just a point outside the Premier League top four and will be coming here believing they can win. United are without the injured Paul Pogba and Eric Bailly, but Dean Henderson will get another chance to displace David De Gea as Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's number one keeper. Moyes will be able to call upon Suchek, his much talked about red card on Saturday having been overturned, but impressive loanee Jesse Lingard won't be available to take on his parent club. It's a 7:30 kickoff for Manchester United against West Ham.
Well, we do have some team news, and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has called on Henderson, so he is going to start in goals. He's went with Lindelof, Maguire, Martial, Rashford, Greenwood, Fred, Alex Telles, Wan-Bissaka, Matic and Van de Beek. And in the West Ham team, there is a very exciting Irish prospect on the bench. We have Meepo Odubeko from Tala, and it's expected that he will get a run. So another reason for us to keep an eye on it and be entertained. Now we are going to turn our attention to golf, and Gary Murphy is on the line for us. Gary, before we get into all of last weekend's action and all of the news, there has been a development with the coronavirus. Padraig Harrington is the latest to be struck down with it, unfortunately.
Yeah, I just saw it's just come up online there. It was a statement about an hour ago. So first and foremost, let's hope Padraig can recover quickly. He's a young man. He's fit and healthy. But it's obviously a worrying time for him and his family, and hopefully everything is okay for Padraig.
Absolutely. We don't like to see anybody getting it, but unfortunately it has become very, very common. And just on a bit of news that came out today as well, Gary, distance measuring devices are to be permitted for the first time by the PGA of America at all three of its major championships. Good news or bad news?
It's interesting news. I don't know really what difference it's going to make. I certainly don't think it's going to speed up play, because the yardage books that all the players have are incredibly detailed. I think if anything, it might slow things down initially. Over time, it might speed things up, but the players will still want to have the yardage book because it gives them details of their landing areas. And, you know, pro golfers don't really just care about where the pin is. They want to know what the carry is, front and back, and all sorts of different things, where a yardage book would be more accurate than lasering the back of a bunker or something like that. Obviously, it will tell you exactly what the pin is, but it's interesting. I think they're kind of trying to move the times. I mean, all amateurs use them now, but I think the pros will still be more dependent on the yardage book.
And speaking of books, Gary, I thought it was interesting to read Rory McIlroy's comments at the weekend after the Phoenix Open. Obviously, Brooks Koepka won at 19 under, but Rory shot a 64 on Sunday, but he referred to his putting on Sunday, where he stopped using the green books and started using his eye.
Yeah, I wouldn't even have the green books. I don't think it's part of golf. I think a part of golf is trying to, you know, deal with your insecurities of trusting a line. I think it's part and parcel of the game. I'm glad to hear that he's dropping the greens book. I think you can say, you know, a lot of things about McIlroy, but I think one area where he's a weaker suit, I would say, for him is reading greens. I think more often than not, it's a very instinctive thing. Your first read is more often than not your best read. It's just trying to trust that. And it's good to hear that he kind of freed himself up on Sunday and just kind of went back to basics, and it certainly worked. He had a great final round.
Well, I was reading that story as well. It also said that he's been using the green books since 2014, and 2014 was the last, was the year he had that amazing year.
Yeah.
Could it be as simple as just trusting his own eye for him?
Oh, it is. I mean, like, I think what people don't give enough credit is that these guys are fiddling the whole time looking for the secret. You know, they'll try something and it works, and then it peters off a bit, and they'll try. But you know, they're week in, week out, they're always looking for a little edge, so they're always you know, trying to find something to give them that, a little bit of difference on a given week, because golf is all about weeks. It's, you know, four different days. No one has the same feelings for 4 days, so they're all the time fiddling around. The interesting thing about what he said was the way he lined up the ball, and he used it up to the Open Championship, which he then won, and then he won in Bridgestone, and then he won the USPGA. So it's interesting that he used something to give him that success and then didn't use it for the majors, and he still won them. So it just goes to show, as great as he is, that they're always trying different things.
And in fairness, they're usually pretty good at sharing as well what they're doing. I don't think I'll ever forget that image of Paul Harrington talking about moving his tongue to a different spot when he was taking different shots. But just on Jordan Spieth at the weekend, I think he's somebody that a lot of people have been happy to see kind of coming back to the top again. He had his best result for 20 months when he was in joint fourth.
It was great, because the thing with Spieth is, as brilliant as he was when he was at the very top of his game, he always still looked vulnerable. And you don't really quite know what's going to happen with him. And that's what makes him exciting to watch. And in all his wins, there was still a bit of drama. Even when he won that Open at Birkdale, I mean, took him a half an hour to play the 13th hole. You know, he hit his ball 70, 80 yards right at target and made an unbelievable up and down for bogey, and that's what Spieth gives you. He's very much a throwback to Seve when Seve was winning in his prime. He hit an incredible amount of bad shots with phenomenal recoveries, a bit like Mickelson too, and I think that's why Spieth adds a bit of spice. He still has a lot to work on. He still has a lot of bad shots in his game to try straighten them out, but if he does, and hopefully he does, because I'm a big fan of his, I'd love to see him get back to where he was.
I think everybody would. Gary Murphy, thanks so much for joining us. Donegal, do we have a competition winner?
Yes, we do. The competition winner is Declan Kelly. Well done. Apologies, I should have been a little bit sharper on that.
I'm usually just thinking about Peter O'Mahony, that's all.
I'm still crying here. Well done, Declan. A brilliant Green Farm hamper on the way. The brilliant Blondet Tracy is up next.